Yo, 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 what's up, everybody? Thank you for tuning in to yet again another fantastic indie creator interview. It's your Caper Sarah Cody, and we're keeping it geekly with our returning guest, Evan from Woven Press. We're here to break down Talks Issue 1 and 2 and everything in between. Welcome back to the stream. How have you been since you last been on, man?
I've been wonderful. How have you been?
Dude, I've been fantastic. I had the opportunity to read this issue, and I couldn't stop gushing about it backstage. It's such an awesome premise, and I love the way you were able to achieve it. Not only that, but kind of just explain like all the different questions I had. And man, Claire is such a total badass. But before we dive into that, let's catch up a little bit. Like, how was last time we had you on? I think it was 287. This is interview 362. So how did Mixology Nor Book 1 go for you? Like, fulfillment, the Kickstarter, you know, give us the deets, man.
Yeah, it was good. It was a whole new genre for me, kind of, which has a new audience than my traditional previous sci-fi books. So that was an interesting journey to try to, you know, get exposure to a whole new type of readership. But the Kickstarter funded and fulfillment went great. I personally don't kickstart any projects until they're done, so fulfillment is, I mean, I already have the printer queued up ready to go when I hit final numbers, and then, you know, then it's off to the races, and digital stuff's coming out right away. So it's good. The fulfillment's in the rearview mirror, and the second Mixology Noir book is just about done too, which is even better than the first one, so pretty happy about that.
Are they, so is the second one going to be following two different characters, or the same characters from the first one?
No, that's so cool. Totally, it's two new standalone horror stories inspired by two different craft cocktails.
So have you announced what those cocktails are yet, or is that still to be determined?
I don't know if I teased it or not, but yeah, I can tell you. I mean, it's one of them's called Manhattan, and one of them's Paloma.
I am curious on what those stories are going to follow those drinks, but we are not here to talk about that. We are here to talk about Tox Issue 1 and 2. Real quick, we have B-Dub over on Twitch joining us. Hey, welcome. Good morning. Thank you for stopping in. So we're in a dystopian wasteland where humanity is no longer able to become, you know, they're not fertile anymore. They are sterilized. They're not able to have children. That in itself is a scary, scary scenario. I mean, when you are not able to reproduce, you are literally the last, like, generation of humanity. I mean, What do you do? Like, what happens in this scenario?
Hold on as hard as you can, I guess.
And that's the thing. Holding on in this world is just as deadly. You end up getting mutated. Either that or the radiation kills you. And the creatures outside that have managed to survive, God, they are hideous looking. I love just how grotesque all these, like, creatures we've, like, grown up loving have turned out to be.
Yeah, that was one of the fun parts of this is, like, being able to just come up with crazy, weird, mutated creatures that, you know, because the whole premise of this radiation just beating the hell out of the Earth is that evolution is rapidly sped up, you know, and creatures like a horse might be mutating one way on the East Coast, and the West Coast, they might end up totally different. So, you know, you have a complete open book in terms of what kind of random shit you can put in this wasteland.
So what causes this post-apocalyptic event? You know, what is the catalyst for it?
Yeah, I don't really go into a lot of specifics about that yet, but it's a human-made event that essentially causes a combination of pollutants and different things to break down the ozone layer, which is a required part of our ecosystem. The ozone layer provides protection against radiation and all the magnetic stuff from space. So interestingly, one of the things we were talking about before this was kind of the premise of what happened to the world here. And there's a lot of post-apocalyptic stuff out there, right? Different franchises. And a lot of people hand wave the world ended, or, oh, there was a catastrophe, now we're here. But I always thought it was important to kind of figure it out. So one of the things I did before I wrote this book, is I went to Reddit, to the subreddit for where physicists hang out. And I was like, hey, I'm trying to build this wasteland scenario where, like, the ozone layer or something has ended and radiation is now hitting the Earth. Like, how can that physically, like, possibly happen in a way where it wouldn't destroy the whole planet? And, like, what's the science behind this? So I got a whole bunch of physicists chiming in and telling me about how all that stuff worked to help me learn.
That is genius, man. That is genius. I love that, because I was about to ask, like, a crazy amount of research must have went in this, and you're like, I was able to pull on a bunch of physicists who studied this for a living.
I mean, it's just me drinking a glass of whiskey talking to people on Reddit, but they were physicists.
Yeah. So. Hey, I mean, what better people to pull from than the people actually in the field? So, I mean, why a post-apocalyptic world? This seems too close to home, Evan. I mean, this seems like something we're actually on the track for right now.
Yeah, I mean, this is 100% inspired by my own life experiences. My wife and I had a child during the middle of COVID. So he was born like right in the worst part of it, where in the hospitals, you couldn't, no family could be there. You know, all the doctors and nurses had PPE on, so you could barely even see their eyes. So it was a very impersonal experience, and it felt very dystopian. And I said to myself, you know, like, or to my wife, I'm like, are you making a mistake here? Like bringing the kid into this hellscape that feels like the new normal. And you know, that's kind of got the wheels going in my head, where I was like, well, what if you were giving birth in an actual apocalypse? Like, what would that experience be like for the woman and, you know, humanity as a whole? So that was actually the impetus for this entire story, was that experience.
That would be such, I remember when my first son was born, I forgot what was going on. They were going through, I think it was, there was something where they, like, fathers had to have a card. If you didn't have a card, you weren't able to get into the room. They forgot to give me a card, so I wasn't able to go into the room. And I remember furious I was at that point. I can only imagine, like, you being restricted by COVID is a way worse scenario. Like, were you actually, like, were you able to, like, be in the room?
I could be in there, but immediate family couldn't even be in the hospital. And I'll tell you what, I don't know what, you know, everyone has a different relationship with their parents and in-laws, and it was a mixed blessing to be like, all right, we don't even have to worry about this. It's just me and my wife doing this. You know, we can just be like, all right, you can see this baby in like 2 weeks, and we're just going to do this ourselves. So it was a mixed blessing.
And you said that was like in the middle. That was right when they kept pushing it further and further. Like, hey, we're only going to be in this for a week or two. So you probably were at that moment thinking, we were never getting out of this.
Oh, yeah. There was no end in sight at that point.
That would be terrifying. But, you know, thankfully we did get out of that. And man, that is such a remarkable like thing to pull from to create this story, because the story was so impactful and so personal. I really love Claire's person, you know, her personality and just who she is. And just kind of like the way you introduced her character in the beginning, the way the exposition was sprinkled in, you know, I thought it was brilliant. Who's the creative team involved in this? This thing is just gorgeous.
Yeah, I mean, definitely credit due to Eric Palicki, who's the co-writer, but he did the majority of like the page-to-page scripting for this story. And he is an amazing writer. I mean, I don't know if you've read any of Eric's stuff, but he's done a lot of published work. If you haven't, checked out his stuff, like Atlantis Wasn't Built for Tourists is an awesome vampire horror series.
I love that name.
He's got Blacksmith is an amazing horror action fantasy book from Ahoy that just got renewed for a second volume. So he's I was connected to him through the editor James Emmett, who's now at Mad Cave, but he was freelancing at the time. So he was the editor that I reached out to initially with this idea, and he connected me with Eric. I'm a writer myself. Obviously I like to write, and I've done quite a few books, but my strong suit is more in like the art direction, editing, graphic design, like tying everything together. So that's why I wanted to make sure this book would really shine and appeal to publishers as well. So that's why I enlisted the help of people substantially better than me at creating comics. And so that's the editing and writing team. Then Ben Worrell is the artist. He's an awesome artist. He's done a lot of indie work, including a lot of his own IPs that he's done well with on Kickstarter. And then Marta Gasparoni is the colorist, who is a relatively new colorist, but she's done a few published things, like for like Source Point, she did a one shot, and then a lot of indie work too.
Yeah, these interiors are gorgeous. We have Strider Nolan, Michael Katz over on YouTube. Pages look great, really professional. This is a Kickstarter. Absolutely, right here. I'll drop the link. We're gonna be pulling it up. So if you're still here in just a few moments, you could check it out with us. But in the meantime, for everyone watching, right here is the link to check this out. And as you guys know, we would love to see a back. But if you can't back, simply putting this on Facebook and Twitter is 100% free to do. And word of mouth costs nothing. I mean, you know, you're going to have a friend or a family member who will love this story. Especially someone, you know, I think, dude, as a parent, like, I think this just hits so much harder, too, because thinking, like, what would I do? You really invoke really good questions on, like, how you would handle that situation. Right. One thing I really loved, too, was, like, some of the weapon designs in this. Like, what was, you know, did you pull from any post-apocalyptic stories that have been out? Like, the way these weapons were designed were so awesome, man.
Yeah, I just want to call out too, this is the Kickstarter right now, but this book is coming out to your local comic shop in July from Blood Moon too. So if you prefer to buy your stuff from your local store, you can snag it then. But yes, I'm a huge fan of post-apocalyptic stuff. I mean, that's probably my favorite personal genre. The Fallout franchise, especially like Fallout 2 and 3, are my favorite games that have ever existed. I'm a huge Mad Max fan. So, I mean, this is a combination of a ton of different influences, ranging from, you know, those things to Borderlands, Children of Men is another one that was obviously, you know, it says a similar story, but that was kind of something that's always been in my head. What else?
God, I love Mad Max, where you're in the car and you could hook people out of the driver's seat of their car and like slingshot them forward. Dude, it was so brutal. That game was awesome, man. The third person action with the car, like the car support, was just phenomenal.
Yeah, I've always like even Waterworld back in the day with Kevin Costner is still one of my favorite movies. Just anything post-apocalyptic like that.
Ooh, we got some hype too. We got Strider saying I'm back, and then Bryce Bloomfield. If I support on Kickstarter, do I have the ability to get digital? Yeah, I think you have digital copies, correct?
Yeah, there's digital. Yeah, there's digital pledge levels, and if you do back physical, you'll get digital for free as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, Bryce, nice to see you. Thank you for joining in as well. So, man, this story is phenomenal. You mentioned a direct market release. So you and Keith have been in talks too. When did that happen? When did you get involved with Blood Moon?
Yeah, I mean, this deal was struck 3 or 4 months ago, I think. It's just, you know, making sure we can get the timelines and everything locked together, because obviously any publisher wants you to have, you know, be close to completing the series before they can lock in the timelines. So Yeah, the first issue is coming out in the middle of July. And I'll be doing a lot of marketing and stuff pretty soon to try to get visibility for those pre-orders and final order cut off and all that fun stuff.
Dude, let's go. Congratulations on that. And this is also a double issue Kickstarter too. I know last time we had you on for Mixology Book One, That was kind of two stories in one. You know, why the push for having a two issue release this time around?
Couple different things. One, I have so many books in the pipeline that if I Kickstarter single issues, I would be doing it forever. So I'm probably, unless it lines up where like I'll do a Kickstarter for two and or for three and four for the series, and then five plus a trade will be its own. But I'm probably going to do double issue Kickstarters for the rest of eternity now, because it's easier to not have to do multiple Kickstarter campaigns, but also everyone wants more to read, right? Like if you can, why get 22 pages when you can get, you know, 48 pages or a larger amount to get your teeth sunk into right away.
And I think right now would be a perfect segue. Let's go ahead and sink our teeth into the Kickstarter and see what all the hype is about. So everyone that is watching that's been talking about the Kickstarter, let's go ahead and pull it up and check it out together. Ooh, we just got a back live too. Man, that is awesome. Thank you, whoever that was.
Look at that. It's like playing craps or playing slots in Vegas. Just watch those numbers go up.
And I've never ran a Kickstarter, but I've done plenty of interviews where I see people like, you know, the head like switching back and forth, checking screens. Like, how is that? Is it taxing mentally for you?
Yes, but I think we talked about this last time I was on here, but I have another part of my business that I've been doing longer is tabletop gaming stuff. So this is like the 30th Kickstarter I've done. So all the mental fatigue, I'm to a place of comfortability now where I don't check it like every 30 minutes or whatever. Mm-hmm. I can kind of let myself just go about my life and then check it in the evening and do the updates and stuff. So, but early on, it's insane how mind-numbingly, you know, anxious you are the entire time.
So we are looking at Tox issue 1 and 2, the first two issues of a new post-apocalyptic story. What does it mean to be a human in a world that left humanity behind long ago? Currently at $3,639 of a $4,000 goal with 122 backers and 3 days left to go. Guys, if you're on the fence, let's make it happen. We are like right there teetering on the edge. How are you feeling right now? I mean, you're like 3 days to go. You're almost funded. I mean, stress. Are you stoked? Like, how are you feeling at this moment?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not worried. So there's some good metrics you can use in Kickstarter to determine like what you expect for final numbers. So we have a dashboard, creators have a dashboard that show you how many people have followed the Kickstarter and how many of those have converted to backers. So you have a pretty good estimate of what the total numbers will be when Kickstarter sends out that reminder to all the followers at 48 hours. So based on what I expect from that, I'm very confident we'll get funded. And I just put up some info for the first stretch goal yesterday. So I'm hoping we can even get some stretch goal action in there.
Ooh, let's go. And then Project We Love as well. Congratulations on that. We have Strider Nolan. I just back. Thank you for backing. We appreciate that. You get a commission, Cody. So look at this cover right here. This is gorgeous. This is your cover C?
Yeah, that's from Alex Amoruso, who's an amazing artist. I have him do a cover for basically everything I do.
I love this so much. So we got a lot to look at right here. Humanity will burn. Toxing is false life. I mean, can we talk a little about like what toxing is, or is that too much spoiler?
No, it's we can talk about it. So the premise is that since radiation is just beating the hell out of the Earth nonstop, everyone is exposed to it, and the radiation will kill you very rapidly. And when it first happened, it killed, you know, the vast majority of humanity right out of the gate. But there was a medical breakthrough right in the nick of time called toxing. Is a process that allows you to essentially get hooked up to this machine that's similar to like a dialysis machine, where it injects additional like antibodies and helps to clean your blood out. So it essentially like brings your radiation level down. And you have to do this every 6 months to a year, depending on how exposed you are, or you're just going to die. But the toxin has the side effect of possibly risking a reaction that triggers rapid mutation in you. So Everyone's living on borrowed time. You're going to die eventually. And the thing you have to do to save your life is like rolling the dice and might accidentally turn you into a mutant in the process.
We were talking backstage too. I just love that catch 22. Like, the only way to survive is to get toxin that could very well like mutate you too. So it's like you really don't have a good choice. You know, it's like, do you stay underground for the rest of your life, or do you try to get, you know, at some point you have to go up and get supplies. You have to scavenge for food, right?
Well, even if you are underground, you're still getting dosages of radiation in the water you're drinking and the food you're eating. You know, not just those that choose to go above ground are getting the radiation in much higher doses.
So for everyone that was watching over on the Keeping It Geekly side, you get the animated look. So you've seen some of these interiors on a image slideshow. But for everyone else, right here is a larger look at things. I love these designs right here. So what's going on with this bird? What's up with the eyes, its tongue, its wings? Like, it's heavily mutated.
Yeah, I mean, every creature out there is, you know, the interesting thing about like creatures in reality is they evolve over time, right? And it's a very long process, and they evolve as a species slowly to suit whatever their needs are of their environment, what they need for survival. But with radiation in this case here happening in such large dosages, it's fast-tracking evolution, and creatures can evolve in isolation even. So you might have a bird over here that has, you know, rapidly evolved to suit its own hunting style and what it does, whereas 10 miles away you might have the same bird evolve completely differently. And then obviously they're interbreeding and doing different things too, so you never know what kind of creatures you're going to run into.
And then these weapons too, you could definitely see a lot of the Mad Max influences here with some of these.
Sure.
Yeah, this is awesome. And then this horse too, where she's talking about, like, I've never seen a horse, but I've heard how beautiful they were. And they're just, it's like, it reminds me of Shazam when they're talking about the unicorns. And it's like, And then I just love how awesome graphic and gory it is too. Are we going to expect to see like more levels of this violence within the series?
Yeah, absolutely. The first issue is a lot of action. The second one still has action, but goes more storytelling. And then three is heavily into like the story and back and flashbacks, and then four is just nonstop insane action. So yes, there's, it kind of wavers between doing a little bit of both, but there's going to be lots of blood and lots of a high body count by the end of it.
So what does it mean to be pregnant with a child in a world that is sterile? Like, what like, that just seems like there's in itself could have so many repercussions.
Right. I mean, obviously, I'm not a woman, so I had to lean heavily on my wife's experience and conversations with her and getting her feedback on making sure I had this take right. But, you know, it's a process that is different for everybody, you know, depending on your own personal history, your own level of comfortability, you know, if you have anxiety, any number of things that influence this. And Claire is obviously, the main character, Claire, is a woman who has spent her entire life scavenging in the surface. She's one of what is called a rat in the story. It's an acronym for relic and tox scavenger. So she's going up there risking her life to get the supplies and things that her settlement need to survive. So she's very hardened, you know, badass character, but then suddenly she has this life growing in her and it changes her whole mindset. Mm-hmm. And she's, to her knowledge, at least, the youngest person alive. She was born literally right as the cataclysm happened. So she's, you know, the idea of being a mother and what that even meant was never in her mind her entire life, because, you know, survival was everything. And also, interesting aspect of the story too, like, things change in the story because everyone's dying and can die at any time. Relationships take on a different meaning. Love really isn't a thing. You know, sex becomes used as more of a way to pass the time and a bartering tool. So the whole idea of like loving something in someone is explored in this story as well too.
Ooh, and that's, you know, that is such a really intricate way of looking at things too. Like, you know, because their money wouldn't be a thing in a post-apocalyptic world. Like Fallout, you know, how they use bottle caps, you know. So sex definitely would be bartering tools and such. And like, you know, you don't have the fear of getting pregnant. So like,
exactly.
But eventually someone does. So we have Bryce real quick. The art and designs of the mutated animals, and forgive me on the pronunciation of this, gives me big Lorenzo di Falencio on Oblivion Song vibes. Just animals, not aliens. I don't think I've ever heard of that person, but I'm going to definitely check them out after this interview. Yeah, the mutations look gorgeous. And I especially love how you can see like the mutations in the human, like how this dude's like losing his lower jaw. This guy looks so brutal.
Yeah, Oblivion Song is a great story if you haven't read it. It's another one. It's a little bit more of like the sci-fi vibe too, but it's definitely apocalyptic as
well. So that's a big mark of praise then.
Oh yeah, I appreciate it.
Dude, let's go. So let's go ahead.
Gotta give Ben credit for the designs. He, you know, other than just us coming up with some designs, Ben had an amazingly good time, I think, coming up with all these different mutant designs.
So let's check out some of these rewards as well. So we have the digital pledge levels right here. You can get for $8 Tox 1 and 2 cover A. At 12, you get the cover A, B, C, or D. And then Tox 1 and 2 plus Woven Press back catalog at 25. So you can get that Mixology Nor book 1 and then the Ignis Quadrant volume 1 trade paperback. How many pages is that at $25?
It's 160 pages. It's 5.5 issues collected, and they were pretty standard issues. So
wow, that is one big bang for your buck at 25 for that digital pledge level. And then we have the print pledge at 18. You can get Tox 1 and 2 one set of covers, shipping at $6, and then you could choose from the covers as well. I love how like awesome these prices are too with the variants. I mean, what made you kind of keep around the same price with them?
Honestly, my pricing strategy, I mean, this is more covers than I generally am comfortable doing, honestly, because after I mentioned earlier, I've done the 30 Kickstarters at this point in my life. And for me, fulfillment needs to be a thing of sanity. Like I need to not have 25 covers to fulfill. And also as a consumer, I mean, I backed hundreds of Kickstarters myself, and I need clarity of pledges when I look at something, right? Like I don't want to have to like do math in my head. Tell me a price, tell me what I get for it, make it simple. And when you pick variant covers too, I understand value and pricing differently things for, you know, different print types, whether you're doing metallic covers or any number of things, but these are all, you know, regular printed covers. So I didn't think that there was any reason to try to do complicated pricing, right?
No, I like that. I like that a lot. And at $50, we have the Tox 1 plus 2 cover A plus entire Woven Press print back catalog. So, I mean, another outstanding price too. Like this is, dude, Evan, you are killing it with these tiers, man.
Trying to give choice. That's one thing I've gotten feedback before is like my Ignis Quadrant campaign. Every time I did one of those, there was a retail or standard cover, and then one variant that was a wraparound foil printed, like insane, very cool, but you know, kind of fancy cover. And that was amazing for the fact that it was easy to fulfill, right? Mm-hmm. And you didn't have too much mental gymnastics to do it. But a lot of people, especially people that like to collect, are like, dude, come on, we need more.
Really love like the side. It almost feels like a nod to Watchmen.
That's exactly what the influence
was. At 65, we have Tox 1 plus 2, every cover, A, B, C, and D. 8 books in total at 65, shipping 15 on that. Man, awesome prices on this. We have postcards unlocked at 4,300. Look at this rhino. That would be, you know, that's one thing I didn't think about. You know, we got to see just the small animals mutated. What about the big guys, the elephants, rhinos, gorillas, bears, dude? I can't wait to see what you do in this world, man. It sounds like there's going to be some crazy potential with later. How many issues do you guys think you're going to get out of this series?
The first story arc is 5 issues.
Awesome, man. Is there more arcs after that, or are you guys just gearing towards one?
To be determined. I mean, we'll see how the direct market release goes and how kind of the continuing Kickstarter goes. I'd love to keep playing in this world. The story, you get a satisfying end in the first story arc, but there's a lot more that can happen.
We have a Kickstarter exclusive cover right here. This guy looks badass too. What's up with this guy with the horns?
Yeah, I have to keep reading to find out.
touche.
I can give you a hint to it. So like when people mutate, right, you start to mutate because of the toxin. You change, and nobody wants to see their future, right? So you're not like effectively thrown out or anything, but you eventually get shunned by the humans because you're showing them the inevitability of their future. So you start to get mutated, you kind of wander on the surface, and all these mutants that are on the surface, like they're still have traces of humanity, and they can band together, and there's a lot of the dregs of what used to be humanity roaming the surface still that are going to cause a lot of problems.
Real quick, here is a look at the creative team in its entirety. A big shout out to everyone involved with making this series. Tox issue 1, like I said, I had the chance to read it. It has the Geekly seal of approval. I loved it. This series, it is going to be badass, man. I cannot wait to see what you do with issue 3 and issue 4 going forward. Everyone watching, right here is the link to check it out once more. Now, Evan, after kind of going through that, what would you like to say to anyone who might be on the fence about backing if you just had a few moments to kind of address them?
One of the things I pride you know, myself on is putting everything we possibly can into these books in terms of trying to find the best people to work with. You know, absolutely trying to get perfection with the graphic design, the lettering, which is something I do myself. So I think, you know, you can kind of see that in the previews and stuff, but I think the level of quality you will find in attention to detail is very high compared to a lot of what's available in Indie Comics. And I think it's worth your money if you want to read some good stories that have action, but also, you know, take a high road in storytelling to some thought provoking, you know, thinking, but also keep the action rolling.
And it is definitely action packed. I love just like every page, like it just felt like, you know, it's definitely a book you want to read like two or three times to kind of just get fully immersed in it. There's just so much to read, so much to look at, and it's so detailed too. This world is gorgeous. So, Evan, you were talking about, you know, having a big slate for 2023. Like, what else is coming out this year for you?
Oh boy, I have all kinds of stuff. I'm working on a graphic novel right now called Hell's Canyon, which is a fantasy Western horror. I'm pretty excited about that. I shared a few previews on Twitter for that. I think have you ever talked to CJ Hudson on here before?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. So CJ and I created a book together as well, called The Duke of Deep Town, which is
I love that.
Yeah, we're both martial artists, so that's how I connected with CJ. I do Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, and he's done Jiu-Jitsu and boxing as well. So
see, I want to do that so bad. I do Kenpo. My daughter was getting bullied in school, so I wanted to get something easy for her, stand up. Just teach her how to punch, really. But yeah, jiu-jitsu, sure. Like, there's a gym close to us. And that is such an awesome, awesome martial arts to get into. Like, how long have you been doing it for?
16 years.
Wow! So you're a badass, man.
I mean, I could handle myself if I had to.
Do you do tournaments?
Yeah, I've done some tournaments. Not recently, since I had a kid, but I did quite a few when I was younger.
That's so cool. Sorry to interrupt. So you and CJ are working on a book about martial arts, though?
Yeah, so one of the things I've always wanted to do in comics is... Obviously, you have to embellish things in comics to keep it exciting and entertaining, right? But I've always wanted to factor in real martial arts, you know, jiu-jitsu, judo, MMA aspects, things that are like a little bit more realistic, but still fun. So I've done that in some of my other books with like wrist locks and different things that are, you know, relevant. But I wanted to have a book that was more focused on actual martial arts that could really, so those that do martial arts and understand it, or even like MMA fans, can appreciate what's happening there. The book, Duke of Deep Town, is a story very much inspired by my own experiences, where it's an old washed up guy who used to fight a lot and train, and he'd had things happen in his life where he had to give it up to help his family, and he lives in an old, what's New Milwaukee is the city, it's a cyberpunk dystopian story, and he's forced back into the ring through some different circumstances, and it ties together action storytelling, but also with a focus on fighting, right? He trains and fights in the ring, and there's all kinds of stuff related to that there. So that's a fun story that is in the works right now that I'm going to be pitching publishers on pretty quick here. And what else? I'm working on a vampire period piece that takes place in 1840s New Orleans that I'm pretty excited about as well, where it's a woman vampire named Chris who's been on the run for a couple hundred years from a group in the Catholic Church that is trying to hunt her down. So that's a pretty exciting one. What else I got going on? There's a bunch of other stories.
I Man, so vampires, martial arts. I love it, dude. And then Mixology Book 2 is coming out too, right?
Yep, Mixology Book 2 is nearly finished. I love that double issue flipbook format. Obviously, like I said before, I'm a big fan of putting as much content in a release as I can. Mm-hmm. Like, it's really unrewarding to sit down and read a 22-page floppy, in my opinion. I think a lot of people agree with that. I think the format's going a lot more towards trades and even, you know, larger, you know, prestige format issues and stuff, too, and I want to do more of that myself.
Dude, absolutely. We have Bryce real quick asking, what are your top three influences?
Top influences? I came to comics kind of late in my life because I grew up in northern Wisconsin where I couldn't access them anywhere. So I started reading them later in college. So I'm not really a fan of the superhero genre, but the first comic I ever read that I still love and read all the time to this day is Fear Agent, if you're familiar with Fear Agent. And then all the traditional stuff. I mean, I read a lot of the Mark Miller stuff. I'm actually working on an espionage book, somewhat inspired by some of the stuff he's done as well, too. What else? I mean, I love reading a lot of the old Image books too. Like that style of book, like the late 90s Image stuff, is the kind of comics that I like to read and that I want to be writing as well.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you for that great question as well, Bryce. So we've had you on before, Evan. You know the drill. I always love asking for a little bit of advice. And I think this time around, let's go ahead and capitalize on your strengths as a co-writer or co-creator with another person involved. So anyone looking to do the same thing, what would be your biggest piece of advice for working with another person, you know, in a co-creation?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things that I've learned coming into this is that, especially when I'm explicitly reaching out to recruit people myself to help write my stories, is that I had to let go of the fact that it's my story, right? Like I'm ideating these things initially and I have the story I want to tell, but when you get other people in there, especially if they're more creative than you in some aspects too, you have to be open to being flexible and thinking about the ideas they're bringing to the table, but also understanding that if you let them bring their own influences and feelings and stuff they want to say as well, it ends up being a much better story than if you were going to try to do it in isolation.
Yeah. And, you know, it's letting go of that wheel and letting someone else grab it. You know, that can be a hard thing to do, but there can be so much benefit to it too. Sometimes, you know, they're looking a little bit outside of the box and they can bring something to the table that you might not necessarily have ever thought about.
Right. And that's not just, you know, writing. I mean, that's once the art starts happening and once you put letters and everything on there, like it's constantly, a comic book is constantly evolving and mutating until that moment when it hits the press.
Oh, absolutely. So, Evan, I don't know if we did this last time, but we always end the show now just chopping up a little bit about what you're consuming outside of creating. So, I mean, what are you reading? What are you watching? If you game, what are you playing?
Oh, man. So this is going to make you sad, but I was an avid video gamer my whole life. And about 4 or 5 years ago, I had to give it up cold turkey just because I had too much going on.
When I get into a game, I
call in sick to work for like 3 days and then play it again. So, I mean, I've been watching a lot of TV lately. I'm into The Mandalorian. I love the Lord of the Rings, the new Rings of Power series, you know, the new Game of Thrones series. I was just having this conversation with someone the other day, but as somebody who grew up like a hardcore nerd and finding it difficult to get my hands on, you know, stuff I wanted to consume, it's the most amazing time to be a nerd. Like you
it is.
Honestly can't even keep up with all the content that's coming out right now in the fantasy and sci-fi realm. So that's amazing. So let's see, in terms of like consuming. So comics wise, I think I mentioned this briefly, but I'm starting to put together a new espionage spy action book, which I'm really excited about because that's probably my second favorite kind of genre related to post-apoc. So I've been reading a whole bunch of different espionage type stories. I mentioned this briefly, but most recently, King of Spies from Frank Miller's. I keep reading that book and just trying to absorb everything I can from that. I love that series so much.
I'm going to have to check it out. We have David Schmeling, great visual, great interiors. Greetings from Germany. Hey, thank you for joining us. I appreciate it, David. I hope everything is good for you overseas. You know, it's funny about the playing a game so much you call off work. Fallout 3, when I first got that, I remember I was working as a telemarketer, like way when I was like 18 or 19. And I remember getting sucked into that when you first, what is it, Megaton? Or Mega, the town with the atom bomb. Yes. And I remember right when I got there and I got to Jericho, the first follower you can get, I was like, I'm gonna call off work. And then I ended up quitting and I ended up just playing the game for like a week straight, dude. It was such a good game. With that being said, go ahead.
I was gonna say, you know, I replayed Fallout 3 when I was in college, and I actually failed and missed my calculus final because I was so into Fallout 3. I just, I'm like, fuck it, calculus is over.
Dude, I got a guidebook, and I got every special weapon you could get in there, because every weapon you can get has a special version that you could find. And I remember doing, like, the Republic a Day quest. Like, oh, there's so many good, like, dude, it's one of those games you could just sink 6 months into if you really wanted to. But, guys, with that being said, it is time for us to wrap things up. Hope you all have a lovely day. Right here is the link to back this campaign and make it happen. You still have 3 days, guys, so get on it while it's still hot.
Yeah, appreciate the support.
If you miss it, it's going to be at your local comic book shop sometime in the near future. So be sure to ask your local comic book shop to put it on their shelves. I hope you all have a fantastic day. But most importantly, guys, keep it geekly.